That is a good question. How do you measure market share? Well, having gone to business school, what they teach in business school are all these case studies of publicly traded companies. Yeah. Why do they do that? Well, because the data is public. When you work in small business, that is just not the case.
Hello and welcome to Make It, Move It, Sell It. On this podcast, I talk with company leaders about how they're modernizing the business of making, moving, and selling products. And of course, having fun along the way. I'm your host, Adam Honig, the CEO of Spiro.ai. We make amazing AI software for companies in the supply chain, but we're not talking about that today. Instead, today, we're talking with Jake Monti, the president of Aster Brands, which is a manufacturer of business opportunities for concrete producers globally. Jake, I can't wait to get into that. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Aster Brands. What does that mean? You're the manufacturer of business opportunities.
Well, let's zoom out just a hair, because Aster Brands is kind of a weird, what is an Aster? It's a weird word, right?
Yeah.
So a little bit about that. We're a multi-generational family business. And I'm the third generation technically, but generation zero is my great-great-grandma Constance, who was a flower farmer, and she grew asters. So fast forward 100 plus years, and when we were doing some brand architecture, we decided that we wanted to launch multiple brands in different product categories, and we said, hey, we need something, a brand structure that we could add stuff over time. And we picked Aster Brands because of the family story. But number two, I have two little girls. And how cool is it to be able to tell the story to your daughters about a strong family female entrepreneur? So that's where that came from. And to answer your question specifically, what do? You're right. We're a sales, marketing, and intellectual property company that manufactures business opportunities for concrete producers globally. That is a mouthful. What that means is we invent products, manufacturing systems that you put concrete into. And the reason you do that is because concrete's heavy. You can't truck it very far. So when we invented our products and sold them locally in our local concrete manufacturing business, we learned that we're in a rural environment and a lot of people live here. And we didn't have enough capital to put three plants in every single state. So we said, hey, let's see if we can't get a patent, package this as a business opportunity and sell equipment. And it turns out we could. And it's gone from there.
So maybe tell us about one of the applications of this. So what are some of these products that get manufactured?
That is a great question. So our strongest customer product category is retaining walls. We have multiple brands. Ready Rock was our initial brand, and that is a commercial retaining wall product. Each block, think about them as giant concrete Legos. They weigh over 2,000 pounds each. So if you think about how in the world do you sell a giant concrete Lego, think about any commercial development where you might have multi-tenant housing, an apartment complex, a gas station, all on one site, and there's a bunch of grade change. And where you're trying to maximize the number of parking spaces that you need. So said another way, what the product does is we sell usable land, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll put a Ready Rock retaining wall right tight on a lot line where you can put your utilities, your water main, storm sewer, those things directly behind the wall without needing any soil reinforcement, and you can pave your parking lot directly on top of it. So that's what got us into the business. And since then, we can do lots of other things in the commercial space. Then we have another brand called Rosetta Hardscapes, which is also retaining walls, but it's all for outdoor living. So think about your home. You want to go hang out in the backyard, you want a patio, a seat wall, you know, things like that. We make products for that. And then we have the third brand that we are in the market with is called Pole Base, which, believe it or not, I'm a marketing major. I picked that name, which is the worst name ever. It is the base of a pole. I figured it'd get a lot of Google searches, so it was very literal because that's how it shows up on construction plans. But if you think about any parking lot at the grocery store or anything, they're all lit at night. Every one of the poles with the light on top is on a concrete foundation, and we came up with a patented system for that as well. And we also have a pretty robust innovation program. We're working on a new category for coastal erosion. We're going to call that Coast Armor. We have our first couple projects at our plant in Florida that we have taken to market, but before we go license it globally, we need to refine it a little bit more yet. So,
I can see a big market for that coastal erosion. I mean, I live right near the coast, and it's definitely a big issue all the time. So that's going to be a growth opportunity, no doubt.
I think it could be. I hope so. We'll find out.
So you on one hand, you're manufacturing these concrete Lego blocks, as you call them. And on the other hand, you're kind of licensing out, because it would be very complicated to ship them all 2,000 pounds each from northern Michigan to Boston, where I live, or something like that.
Well, and that was the thought about licensing it. So if you walked through our plant, it's all steel processing, polyurethane manufacturing, structural testing, things like that. We're selling the actual equipment that we'll ship to our guy in Boston, for example. We do manufacture it in Boston. So if you need some stuff, let me know. I can connect the dot. And then he will put the concrete in the equipment to make the product locally there.
Gotcha. And so you both make and license. That's part of the business model for everything.
Correct. And we make it primarily so that we know the product works. If we can make it ourselves, turn that product category into a profitable business unit, the thesis is that it can be reproduced elsewhere. And most of the time that is true.
And so when you're providing, you know, the retaining walls and the other products, you know, that make up the retaining walls for customers, what, you know, is there anything really unusual that customers have asked you to assist with?
Ooh, you're looking for some good stories. Yeah, we've had some very interesting things that we've done over the years. So I'll give one example. We came up with a new product we call it our Positive Connection System. It is a way to connect a geogrid material to our blocks so you can reinforce a slope.
Okay.
And it has all kinds of technical benefits. And we're like, all right, this is new. Let's go get some smaller projects, make sure that all of our math and the structural testing worked. So like project number three was a 25 or so foot tall wall holding up two freight trains.
Oh, wow.
So of course, you know, will that work? Yep, sure will. All the math says that it's true, you know. And it turns out it was true. It's been there for probably 15 years and holding up incredibly well. But that was something that, you know, if you are an inventor of products, you always want to say yes to get things going. And sometimes you're like, I hope it works, you know.
Yeah, again, exactly. The math says it's true. Put a little extra on that one just to make sure.
That's exactly right. And in all seriousness, I mean, we have a really good team of master degree civil engineers and like that. So it wasn't like a cowboy approach. I mean, there was a very legit structural analysis, and we integrated things called inclinometers and strain gauges and all kinds of highly technical stuff to measure if the wall would move or any of that. And I mean, it performed as the math suggested it would perform. So that's one that's kind of interesting.
Now, so I know, you know, probably, you know, because you're in the licensing business as well as the manufacturing business, partnerships are really important to you guys. Is that been right from the start, been part of your model, or did you kind of evolve into it?
So, that's a great question. There's different kinds of licensing, and licensing is different than a franchise. So I always like to say, I mean, if you were to go buy a restaurant chain franchise, your agreement will probably be 300 to 500 pages long. Licensing can be that too, but it doesn't have to be. Ours is like 5 to 10 pages long, depending on what flavor you're buying. So there's less rules, but we're not licensing like a patent. And then letting somebody else use that and sell it and so on and so forth. We have all the IP, but we're actually selling a territory along with the manufacturing equipment. And the ongoing license fee is to protect that territory. So we won't set up another manufacturer in X number of counties, or you can think of it as a radius. That's largely dependent on how far you can economically freight concrete materials.
Yeah.
That I bring that up to answer the question and talk about partnership, because that's how that system works. But we're also selling capital equipment. So in our agreements, renew from time to time. So you can't have a guy that'll spend, you know, $3 to $15 million in equipment over time and just say, oh, we don't like you anymore. Let's go away.
Yeah.
So we oftentimes say our agreements are not that unlike a marriage, and that they're designed to be long term. And you know, like any good marriage, they ebb and flow. There's good times and bad times, but we really do aspire. We're people. We make mistakes all the time, but we really try to do four things, and we try to do them really well. The first thing is we try to set up new accounts. So we have 200 customers in 30 plus countries right now. We're growing. But what we've learned is that if we don't do the second thing well, which is grow market share, it makes it really hard to set up the next new customer, right? So the second piece is the biggest part of our company, we call it the customer engagement team. This is a team that does technical project support. We work really hard to make our customers' phones ring. So we have a robust inbound marketing program to generate project level leads. And then we have the technical support. So we do thousands and thousands of technical support calls where we have a team of, again, civil engineers on staff that will help with that. And that grows the market over time. We do similar things with landscape products. Well, guess what happens? When their market grows and they're successful and they're profitable, it not only makes it easier to set up the next new customer, but it also creates a demand or a question, what's next?
Right.
So we created an innovation program. And we're constantly working on new product categories and making the existing product categories better and so on and so forth. But we can only do those three things well if we're a great place to work. Right. So we spend a lot of energy on just being a great employer, working on culture, and building that culture around a purpose, a strong set of values, and really clear 10-year, 3-year, 1-year, and 90-day targets. We work really hard in that space to make sure that our team knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing, how it lines up with a long-term plan, and how that helps our customers.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that, the purpose and how it relates to the organization. But I want to kind of go back to working with partner customers again. So you talked about wanting to improve market share. How are you measuring that? It seems like it must be really hard to know that.
That is a good question. How do you measure market share? Well, having gone to business school, what they teach in business school are all these case studies of publicly traded companies. Yeah. Why do they do that? Well, because the data is public. When you work in small business, that is just not the case, right? So like when we're not measuring market share in terms of what percentage of this category do we have. We look at it on how much square feet of product are we moving every year and is it growing? And then anecdotally, I mean, we know all of our competitors and we follow that. And we oftentimes just look at simple things like how many employees do they have on their website versus us? I mean, it's like pretty primitive stuff on that level. But I can tell you when you look at that versus some of our competitors, it's just a lot more.
Yeah. So, and are you doing that for your customers as well? Because part of the goal was to help them create market share, as I understand it, as well. Is this something that you're working with them on, or they already have their own process for it? Or
so what we do in that space is we have a pretty robust per account program where we're measuring through Spiro of all things that we're integrating into our program specifically, where we're measuring, you know, how many projects, how many contractors, how many civil engineers per account, per geography. And then we're just constantly working to grow that. Yeah. So that's how we do that specifically. But again, I mean, to your point, it is very hard in the small business environment to say, yes, we have 37.3% market share. I don't know how to do that. We just do it based on improvement and the things that we can see.
As long as it's more tomorrow than it was today, we're going in the right direction. That's kind of
exactly
the philosophy
right
here. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. No,
well,
that makes a lot of sense to me. So jumping back into the purpose a little bit more, you know, you guys strike me as a very purpose-oriented company. Is that something that's been also passed down through the generations, or how did that evolve?
We are, again, a multi-generational family business. And just a quick thing, my aunt has spent probably the last 20 plus years putting together a family history. And for Christmas 2023, she gave all of us a 400-page book of the family history.
All right.
So like, having grown up in my family, all you hear is the urban legend, right? So she went back like in the 80s and interviewed my grandpa and her brother on a tape recorder, and she converted that into the stories. So I'm about two-thirds through the book, and I'm getting to read, you know, my grandpa and his brother, the founders, in their own words, the stories. And I can tell you, they aren't exactly the same as the urban legends, which has been kind of fun. But our family has a very strong, long-term, faith-based purpose. So they teach in business school again, and most people listening to this, I'm sure, have heard this. I mean, they teach that the purpose of business is to maximize shareholder value, right?
Sure. I think they give that to you on a laminated card when you go in on the first day, actually.
Like day one, right? That's what they teach. Well, you know, I went through that environment, and I probably thought that was true for a long time. But the older that I get, the more I'm just like, that is the worst possible thing you could ever teach business school students. Like, that's like saying the purpose of a human being is to breathe. Well, like, we're all sitting here on the phone, everybody listening, you know, they're breathing every day. If my sole purpose is to breathe, that's not very compelling. Yeah. Well, in business, of course you need to make profit. That's like oxygen, right? But it's being just slowly, the older that I get, I'm just like, man, you know, just straight up financial targets. I mean, although they're fun, they're less compelling. So we came up with a purpose statement that is to change the world in a concrete way. And that's obviously a play on words. I mean, we're selling business opportunity in the concrete product space. But we can tell stories based on how we physically changed infrastructure around the globe with our ReadyRock brand. That's kind of fun. Or Rosetta, we're actively selling families the opportunity to spend time together in their backyards.
Sure.
That's kind of cool. But if you peel the onion back a little bit further, the purpose, what keeps us growing, investing, creating jobs, is so we can help change lives in a concrete way. If you think about a company as a group of people, our thesis as a family has been any organization greater than one probably has a lot of problems, right? Well, what we didn't talk about is Astor Brands is one of five business units. When you look at our portfolio or our enterprise, we have over 450 employees now. So if you have a lot of problems, if you have two employees, there's a lot of problems at 450. So if you want to change lives in a concrete way, what do you do about that as an employer, right? So we're starting to do things to put that, change the world in a concrete way, to put that to work. We are adding, we call them success coaches. We have two or three of them on staff now. They are master-degreed Christian counselors. And the thesis is that if somebody's having a marriage problem or a problem with their kid or substance abuse, we have people in our company that can walk with them hand in hand to work your way through that. Now, as an employer, to me, that's changing a life in a concrete way. And we can give you story after story, an example after example of marriages that have improved or been reconciled, or kids that went through a hard time that came through it. I mean, that to me is why to grow a business. It's stuff like that. And if you can get more people in that kind of a population, changing the world in a concrete way, and yes, you need profit to do that. That's the oxygen to be able to do that, but it's not the purpose. So another thing that we're doing right now as well is we made a deal with our health insurance provider as well as a local healthcare provider that wanted to grow. And we have a bigger office building than what we need. So we converted one of the suites into a medical office. Mm. So now we offer on-demand healthcare for our employees. So it's things like that. They cost money. They're not the cheapest thing to do. But when you look at that, like, it's materially improving the lives of the people that work here. And what's interesting is everybody has a hard time attracting and retaining people. Yeah, it's kind of like self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like the more we go down that path, the easier it gets to attract people and retain people and things like that. So it seems to be working for us. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with I guess on one hand, the purpose of business being to maximize shareholder value, but I don't know. I mean, I don't need a better house. I have a good house. I'd rather invest in people, make a difference.
Well, I think the question for me is always maximize shareholder value at what point in time, right? Because we could be trying to maximize it for today. We could be trying to maximize it for your grandkids, right?
Exactly.
And you know, that's, you have two very different strategies depending upon one point in time. And if your point in time is essentially just the horizon, then, you know, then that's kind of what the purpose is to always be maximizing it. And so
nothing wrong with that. And business has to grow. I mean, they also teach that if you're not growing, you're dying. I'm super pro growth. I mean, we've grown a lot. It's just, I don't know. It's the why. Why do it?
Let's talk a little bit more about hiring, though, because I, you know, on this podcast, we get a lot of people who say that it's a very challenging environment to hire. And so would you say that this sort of approach has been helping with that?
It helps in Astor Brands tremendously with turnover. We have a 3% turnover rate.
Okay.
Which I think is pretty strong.
I think that's very low. Yeah.
Yeah. It also helps attracting talent for sure. And our business is such that we have customers all over. So as time goes on, we're more and more remote. I mean, we have employees in Europe and scattered all over North America, and we have a plant in Florida, and we have the Northern Michigan locations, and so on and so forth. So the benefit to that is our job growth isn't always limited to geography. And at the same time, it just so happens as recently as yesterday, I went to my executive peer group. I'm a Vistage member. Mm-hmm. And the speaker was the author of the book, How to Win the Talent War, or Winning the Talent War, or something like that. And what I learned is that America, on a macro level, is 8 million jobs short right now. And so I think that a growth area for us is getting better at telling the story that I just told, because I think we can better build our pipeline. Because it right now, I mean, this wasn't the case 3 years ago, but right now it's hard to get the candidates. Once we get them in, they don't leave.
Yeah, no, we had a recent guest on the podcast was the chief economist of the National Association of Manufacturers. And he said just manufacturing alone is short 2 million jobs.
I believe it.
I know that there's been a lot of efforts to like raise the you know, excitement about the industry to try to get younger folks involved. So it's, yeah, getting them in the door, that's often the challenge.
I also think it's a business opportunity. So for us, we put some metrics on these things.
Okay.
And the metrics are innovation metrics. So every single company in our network has this problem. I've interviewed them myself. You ask them, what's your biggest problem? Attracting and retaining talent. Okay. If you zoom out and think about that a little bit, it's like, okay, what are they really saying? It's saying they're saying that getting more people in are hard. So how do you get a higher return on the people that you have? Well, that's an automation opportunity. So we've looked at all of our new products and put metrics per product on, okay, how do you get a higher revenue per man hour? Mm. And let's look at that metric and design that into the manufacturing process. We've also looked at things like revenue per square foot of floor space. Because the other thing that's happening is that it is incredibly costly to add building space square footage right now.
Yeah.
And so we think about it now in cubic feet, not in square feet. We try to make everything vertical. So like we're looking at every one of these problems creates a business opportunity for those that are looking to grow, you know? So we see a lot of upside in some of these shortages.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of obstacle is the way kind of philosophy coming out. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
But it sounds amazing.
It's an amazing book. I wish I could remember the name of the author right off the top of my head, but it's sort of about the Stoic philosophy and about how every challenge is actually presenting you with an opportunity to get better or improve. It's awesome.
I'll buy it and read it. Thank you.
We'll put it in the show notes, I'm sure, for people who are interested in it. But hey, Jake, this has been awesome. It's so great to have you on the podcast, learning about your philosophy and the business and the types of, you know, products that you guys are making. Really very impressed with the way that you're super thoughtful about all this stuff. Actually, you know, there's one more question I'd love to get to. I kind of forgot about it earlier, but I asked you whether sort of the purpose of the business evolved or whether it started with later generations. I'm super curious how the evolution of that. Somebody who works in startups, it's like starting a company is like a tooth and nail fight to get to something. And I wonder when you get bigger, whether that's when you layer in more purpose, whether your ancestors kind of layered it right in from the beginning.
It's been there since the beginning. We've wordsmithed it a lot, but if you go back to my grandpa and his brother, their one-liner is, man thinks and the Lord leads. So everything they did, it was, okay, let's figure out how to give back out of the success if we're fortunate enough to be successful. And they looked at their taxable income every year and gave 20% of it away every year. That was right since day one.
Wow.
And which is a big number. That number has ebbed and flowed, you know, over the years. But we call them Gen 2, my dad's generation. A big part of their purpose as well was being philanthropic. They got very involved in different faith-based ministries and humanitarian organizations overseas, and have done all kinds of interesting work. And in our generation, what is emerging, like our application of that, is more how do we invest in our local community with the employee population that we have right in front of us? Because we spend 80% of our time at work, right? So, like, it seems like that's a great opportunity in and of itself. So every generation has applied the principles a little bit differently, which is neat, but the heart and the spirit of it was there since the beginning.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And it's definitely very inspirational, I think, for a lot of people to see how you can kind of bring that through the generations in the business. So,
well, I forget who said this. It was one of the, unfortunately, probably a politician, but the only reason we're able to do what we do is because of those that came before us, right? You stand on the shoulders of giants, so to speak. And the piece that I like to say on that, and when my dad stepped into retirement, what I told him is, don't expect me to do what you did, but you can't expect that we'll pick up where you left off.
Yep.
Right. So it looks a little bit different, but the values and the principles, I think, are really important to maintain, to honor, and to grow.
Right on. Well, Jake, really appreciate your coming on the podcast. It's super great to have you. Just as a reminder for listeners out there, every episode of the Make It, Move It, Sell It podcast is available at spiro.ai/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. And Jake, do you think we should tell people to give us a high rating for this episode?
Oh, man, I think this is the best episode that has come through.
I think so, too. So the best so far. We'll see what happens next. But
the future is bright. The future is bright, Adam. Keep doing it.
Thanks for everybody for tuning in, and we look forward to talking to you on the next episode.
Thanks, Adam.